People sometimes ask me if I became the Ron Van Dam Show announcer because I love what Ron does and I love his comedy. Well, no. It's because Ron broke me out of a Tijuana prison back in 82 and smuggled me across the border in a suitcase in the trunk of a Yugo. And I still owe him for that. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Whatever.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Make yourself comfortable. Because you should. I will entertain you for the next 30 minutes. After that, you're on your own. They call this the Ron Van Dam Show because I am Ron Van Dam. I've actually lost my speech pattern for just a second. Yeah, how are you doing? Good to see you, man. You're looking good today. Wow. Did you comb your hair? Wow. What a difference that makes. I know. It's the small things that mean a lot. When you send me a birthday card and you sign your name at the bottom of the card under the nice stuff that somebody else wrote in a manufacturing plant, that really touches my heart. Thank you so much. In my long civilized life, there are many things that I still, to this day, do not understand. It seems implausible. You would think that I have encountered everything and have an incredible knowledge of every aspect of life. True dat. But there are a couple of things that I just don't get. One of them happened to me yesterday. I was killing some time, which is really, you shouldn't do that. So I was killing some time, and I walked into a sushi bar. It was on purpose. I was hungry, and I had to kill some time. And I figured, sushi, fast, I mean, all these sushi preparing guys, they look like they're on cocaine or something. They're chopping things up and rolling things, and they're so fixated on their jobs. I love the sushi people. So I go into the sushi bar, which, by the way, you sit down. It's not a bar. It's just a long plank of wood with a couple of chairs in front of it. It's a very odd thing, the sushi bar. Have you ever been to one? Raise your hand if you've been to one. And you know I can't see you raise your hand. What are you doing? What are you doing? Simon says raise your hand. God. Anyway, so I get seated at the sushi bar. There's like five chairs up against this plank of wood, which is facing three sushi guys. I don't know if that's what you call them, sushi guys. That's what I call them. Sous chefs, sushi chefs, I don't know. So I'm sitting there, and the waiter guy says to me, would you like to order some sushi? And I said, no, because I don't know. I'd like a spring roll because that's the time of year it is, and looks like they're rolling shit all over the place. So let's roll a spring, shall we? So do you want tofu or shrimp? I said, shrimp, tofu. I'm paying the same money. Give me some shrimp, man. So I'm sitting there, and all you can do at a sushi bar is watch the sushi guys roll sushi. It's fascinating because they are so intense. It's like they are, Oh, like they're playing some type of video game. They're just like they're focused on that sushi stuff. Now in front of me is a glass case. That's what I'm basically sitting up against, a plank of wood near a glass case. And in the glass case are 8 to 10 plastic Tupperware containers. And in it are pieces of fish wrapped in cellophane. And I'm thinking to myself, this doesn't seem healthy. Sushi doesn't seem healthy to me. Sushi, as I understand it in the Bible, sushi is raw fish. And I'm thinking, maybe that's not a great idea. I don't know who came up with this cuisine, but you're taking your chances here. I don't know. I guess it's just me. I'm not into the raw thing. I'll have a raw carrot or some celery or something, but something that was alive that, no, I don't think so. So I'm watching them deal with this, and I'm watching the sushi orders come in, and they open up this glass case, and they take out this plastic Tupperware container and take little pieces of fish out, and they start using it. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that the case is refrigerated. I don't even know if it is. But, I mean, I'm kind of cringing as I'm watching. The art of the sushi is incredible. It is a visual and intense art. But the tools, the implements, the ingredients, I'm not too sure about that. So I'm watching them roll the sushi, and it's fascinating. Just fascinating stuff. And apparently they're rolling it in rice paper. Reminds me of Havana cigars, only this is food. And I'm looking around at the people at the tables eating the sushi, and I'm wondering, are any of them going to die? Because, see, I don't trust eating raw fish. There's just, I've never seen a fisherman or a fisherwoman, let's be nice, in a fishing boat, and they oh, I got one on the line, Jim, and they reel in this fish. I don't know the difference between fish, by the way. If it swims, it has a fin and one of those odd-shaped round heads. It's a fish. I don't know, a carp, cod, bluefish, whitefish. I don't know what the hell these things are. But if they flop around and smell, it's a fish. And if it comes out of the ocean or a lake, that's a fish. You're not gonna go, oh, what are you reeling in there, Bob? Is it a fish? Nope, caught a buffalo by mistake. You don't do that. I've never seen a fisherman pull a fish into the boat off the line, fresh out of the water, and just take it and put it in its mouth and start eating it. I've never seen that. I've seen it with apple picking, where they walk into a field and they'll pick an apple off of the apple tree or something, and they put it in their mouth and they start eating it. You should really wash it off, but, you know, I guess you could do that. I have never, ever, ever seen a fisher person pull a fish into a boat and just start eating it. I've never seen that. But that's what sushi is. Now, Ron, and I'm talking to myself, Ron, they clean the fish, you know. They do. They're not just eating a fish. They're cleaning it. Oh, really? Are inspectors coming in to see if these fish have any diseases? Because they haven't been cooked at all? So, you know, I'm a little skeptical. I can be skeptical if I want to. So I'm watching them roll this stuff in rice paper. Actually, it's not rice paper. I think it's rice. I think it's actual solidified rolled rice. I don't know what the hell it is, to be honest with you. But it's pretty. It's pretty. But I'm just watching them. I don't trust what they're eating there. They're just in top. I mean, these sushi restaurants must have a hell of an investment in the Tupperware industry. The other thing is, in some of these sushi restaurants, the one I went to yesterday, they're not. Here's the thing. Any restaurant that puts their chopped up fish in a Tupperware container and then puts it in a glass case, leery of. By the way, the Tupperware containers were not labeled with the type of fish. They were labeled numerically. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I don't know what was in them, but they were corresponding to the numbers of I don't know. On the counter, which I was staring at through my whole experience, is a oblong carton, and it says on it, plastic wrap. No brand name, just plastic wrap. And I'm staring at this thing. Because in the sushi business, you see, you use a lot of plastic wrap. To keep the fish fresh, you put it in plastic wrap. There's plastic wrap boxes all over the place, Tupperware containers. I mean, man, this is like a plastic wonderland here. And it's kind of fitting because when you go in the ocean, what do you find? You find fish and you find plastics. They have come together again in the sushi restaurant, sushi bar. Okay, now here's what I have to say about that. Sushi is actually, I don't see, when I go to a sushi restaurant, I don't pull up to the restaurant and see bodies lying on the sidewalk because they just came out of the restaurant and they dropped to the ground and died. I don't see that. So I figure that sushi restaurants are okay. I know some people that eat sushi a lot. I mean a lot. And they seem to be perfectly fine. Physically. Mentally, they were never good. Physically, they seem to be fine. So, just because I don't understand sushi doesn't mean that it's not a thing and a perfectly healthy, wonderful thing in the right situation. I don't think you're supposed to raise a racehorse in your apartment in New York City. I don't think that's the right situation, but you can raise a thoroughbred, I assume. I don't do it. I don't see the purpose. But you can do it in the right circumstance. I get that. I don't trust the raw fish thing. I'm just not into it. Not into it. You know, in parts of the country, they actually eat poisonous food. They eat poisonous animals, and they have to eat them very carefully. This seems to me to be a kind of a strange thing to do. I put this in the category of bungee jumpers. When the bungee first came out, this is a joke. I saw probably somewhat sane people wrap a rope around their waist that had some elastic give to the rope, I guess, I would assume, thus the bungee thing. And they would stand on a bridge and on purpose jump off the bridge. They really weren't even sad or depressed. They jump off a bridge, and just before they hit the creek or the rocks below the bridge, this rope, this elastic rope, pulls them back up, and they don't hit the ground, but they come really close. And this is a thing. This is a sport. I don't quite get that. If you're a bungee jumper, I assume you must own a lot of pair of pants because you're going to pee every one of them. And I don't know if those pee stains to that extent come out in the laundry. So you're going through pants like there's no tomorrow. If you walk into a Walmart and the salespeople see you buying pants every other day, the assumption is that's a bungee jumper. If you ask a bungee jumper why they bungee jump, they'll usually say it's an adrenaline rush. I get an adrenaline rush. See, that word is not to be said by human beings. I get an adrenaline rush by drinking beer. All of a sudden, I have to pee really bad. That's my adrenaline rush. The challenge to the adrenaline rush is getting from the bar stool into the bathroom fast enough. Same thing happens to me with Indian food. I like Indian food. It's good. That's food from India I'm talking about, not the other Indian thing. I love it. It's tasty. It's got a nice little bite to it. But a couple hours later, or not even that long, it's a rush to the facility. That's also an adrenaline rush. Kids, if you're constipated, eat some Indian food. That'll take care of it. It'll take care of it really good. Yeah, so I don't know how we got on the bungee thing. I really don't know. There are people that skydive, too. Oh, that's also fun. I don't know if you noticed. We were not created with wings. I don't know if you caught that and looking in the mirror, but we don't have wings. So what we do is some people actually enjoy just jumping out of planes. They have a parachute, but you got to be pretty confident that that chute's going to open. Well, Ron, you know, there are always backup chutes. Yes, there's always having a heart attack on the way down, too. I'm, you know, and then some people jump out of planes on the backs of other people. You know, he's a professional parachute jumper. I'm going to jump out of a plane, but I'm going to be on the back of this guy. Oh, really? Okay. Sounds a little awkward. I don't really get the need to fly through the air with a parachute, and float down and take my chances that way. Another adrenaline rush, more pants. Bring on the pants. You heard the expression pant load? That's where it comes from. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. Some people like ballooning. What is that? Hot air balloons. What a concept that is. This goes back to a time where that was pretty much the only way to get around if you like getting around in the air. What they do is they take fire and they shoot hot air into a balloon, which is basically flammable. And that's it. No engine on the thing. It's a gigantic balloon with a campfire attached to it. And under that, get this, a wicker basket. Talk about flammable city. Well, how big is the basket? Is it like a gondola? No, it's a picnic basket. There's no room in there. There's no protection. There's no glass windows. It's crazy. There's no engine. There's no steering device. You go up in the air with the campfire under the balloon and a picnic basket all in the air. And wherever the wind takes you, if it happens to be into power lines, it's going to be into power lines. There are no smooth landings in hot air ballooning. It's not for the faint of hearted, I'm telling you. Here's the kicker even to that. These young romantic couples, and notice how I said, when I said romantic couple, I had to throw young in there. Because there comes a point in life where, all right, yeah, it sounds nice romantically, but I mean, I'm really tired. this young romantic couple gets into the basket and they take a hot air balloon ride and they think that's romantic. Problem is, you can't do that by yourself. You have to have the hot air man in there with you to do the hot air thing. So enjoy your romance with the third person in this four-foot basket, if it's even that big. That's what I call a threesome, not a romantic twosome. You're doing a threesome right there. That's a triple play if I ever heard one. Three people floating to their death and destruction. All right, we have a guest coming up momentarily, but before we do, we usually do a commercial break, and I really don't know why this should be any different than any other.
We don't get to choose our family names. We're born into them, and some of them are, quite frankly, a little embarrassing. For many, a burden that follows them through life. If you've got an embarrassing last name, you may have thought about having it legally changed, but perhaps you thought it might be complicated and expensive. Well, I'm here to tell you that having your last name legally changed is simple and cost-effective and will take that lifelong burden away in just a few easy steps. Call me today, Attorney Jim Cockwaffle, with the offices of Cockwaffle and Cumstein. We know what you're going through.
Good morning, Ron. Hi, Emmy. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You sound like you're doing great there. Emmy Sims joins us now. A little bit of pleasure. I could use that, certainly. It's a great
Everybody
book.
Everybody can.
Of course they can. It's just what the doctor ordered, as you say. We're talking about romance and relationships, and you're an expert in this field, I understand.
Kind of. I've been doing it for a long time. I've been doing it for over 40 years.
Oh, well, that's an expert to me. Doing anything more than 10 minutes is an expert to me. So that's pretty good. This is under the category of intimacy mentoring. What exactly is that?
Well, I mentor based on my experience, my strength, and, mm-hmm. and how I have come out of several bad marriages, mm-hmm. how the tools that I used, I give them the tools to help them.
Okay.
The difference between a therapist versus a mentor, a therapist spends a lot of money on education and a lot of books, mm-hmm. but they don't share their experience.
I see.
And that's the difference for me.
So it's information by example.
Exactly.
All right. Interesting. Yeah, you know, that's more effective because when someone tells you their experiences, then you know that it worked or it didn't work or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like sharing a recipe.
Yeah. You know, it is like sharing a recipe. See, you're talking about something that people do not talk about. And that's always an interesting thing because intimacy and romance should be in relationships, but yet we don't discuss this with our friends. We don't discuss it, certainly not with our parents. Oh my God. And not even with your partner most of the time. So it's a very interesting phenomenon.
It is so filled with shame and guilt and dread and hell. it stymies, especially women, much more so than men.
Really? Okay.
Yes, much so more. You know, men can scratch themselves at any time
True.
During the day. It doesn't matter where or who. Okay. If a woman did that, the heavens would part.
That's a different thing. Yeah, but not
it's
to say that
not acceptable.
But not to say that men scratching themselves is acceptable either, as far as I'm concerned. It's just something that they get away with.
They do. And I'm not saying it's bad or good. I'm just saying that even though the rules are all the same, they're interpreted differently for different people. And I'm not saying the rules are bad.
Yeah.
But the way we internalize things and the way our mothers, primarily our mothers,
yes,
I wasn't allowed to wear anything but cotton pennies,
yeah, mm-hmm,
underwear because I would be a bad person. I wasn't allowed to wear hoop earrings because that made you a whore.
Yeah.
I mean...
well, times have definitely changed.
My mother
changed.
Had...
Yeah,
well, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't think we're far from it.
No. Let me ask you two questions, Emmy. First of all, when we go to the movies, in every single movie, whether it's a comedy, espionage, drama, no matter what, somebody goes to bed with somebody, and there is a romantic, romantic sexual scene. And I think for many of us, we expect that in life, that happens all the time when you meet somebody or something clicks. And if that doesn't happen to you in your life, these romantic scenes that come out of nowhere, then there's something wrong with you. Do you find that to be the case?
That is absolutely the case. There was a show on TV, a doctor show, and of course they've been Googling it over the surgical table, and then they got into the locker room, and he threw her up against the locker,
I thought,
well, she'll never walk again, because he just put that thing in the middle of her back, and we do. It's no different than Father Knows Best. We try to, that's how family should be.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we do that, and it's not real.
Good.
But the thing that I would like to impart with you is that adult films, toys, negligees, lubes, all of those things, it's a $15 billion industry a year in the United States of America.
Yeah.
Somebody's buying it.
Somebody's buying
watching it.
But
we can't talk about it.
Yeah. And how do you, I mean, and then there was the movie 50 Shades of Grey and the sequels that made it not necessarily acceptable, but to point it out that you can have some wild experiences and fantasies and have fun with it. How do you know if somebody else, how do you know if somebody else is into it until you embarrass yourself by asking them?
Conversation.
Ah.
Communication. Even with your longtime husband or wife, I find that most men want to please their women.
Sure.
But women are too embarrassed or they're scared.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid they'll get mad.
Yes.
They're afraid they'll hurt his feelings.
Yes.
But you can have some of that kind of sex if you're adventurous.
Mm.
The books were much better than the movies, though, to tell you the truth.
Okay. It's good to know.
And the books... The books, Ron, changed women's lives because it excited their mind, which is their biggest sex organ.
Yeah.
And gave them permission to try something different.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a whole nother life if you engage in that. And there are other marriages and relationships, girlfriend, boyfriend, where all the excitement seems to go away after a fashion because of the longevity of the relationship. And I guess that's something that you hear about a lot, is that the magic is
a lot.
Starting to decrease. How do I get the magic back if it's not there?
I think a couple have to make a decision that our relationship is more important than school, soccer, children, parents. Mm-hmm. And they have to do a little work. Any relationship, whether it be friendship or any relationship.
Yeah.
It takes effort and time and education. You don't learn something new without doing a little study, a little research. And it doesn't take a lot to get those juices flowing again. This takes a little bit of time. I always recommend date night and make it. And you can't talk about kids at work.
Yeah.
We have to cultivate a different conversation with the person that we spend our nights and days with.
You're absolutely right. I could talk to you for hours, but I'm not allowed to by law, so I can't do that. But there is a book.
Wow.
It's a little bit of pleasure.
Oh, yes, thank you.
And it's available everywhere.
And your audience,
on
Amazon primarily, and they can reach me on alittlebitofpleasure.com. They can send me an email at Emmy at alittlebitofpleasure.com. If they want to talk to me or want some mentoring, they can. We can exchange through emails a telephone number so they can reach and talk to me. I am available. I am reachable. And it'd be my pleasure.
That sounds great.
Anyone have a better sex life.
You know what your book also does, which I may recommend, is that if one buys the book and just leaves it on a table somewhere in their house or their apartment, your partner might just say, oh, what are they doing with this book? Or they may open it up and start looking at it, and that may actually break the ice for more of an interesting, intriguing relationship simply by having the book in the room. I think it's a great icebreaker.
You're right, and I did a brochure last year, sent it to a therapist and psychiatrist, suggesting that they recommend my book so their clients could talk to them.
That's right.
I've had seven therapists tell me that it did help.
Yeah.
It does help.
It does. And the title kind of brings you right to where you're supposed to go. A little bit of pleasure, we could all use
it.
A little bit. No, it's not overboard, but a little bit. It opens the door for more pleasure.
Then you get a little more.
That's right. It's a door opening is what we're talking about. Emmy Sims, alittlebitofpleasure.com, is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Pleasure.
And my name is spelt with two capital letters, not
yes.
E-M-M-Y.
Right. Yeah, capital M, capital E. Sims, a little bit of pleasure is what you're looking for, though, literally. Thank you so much for your time today. It has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you to my guest, and thank you to you for being here today. You were really, really marvelous. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, but until that time arrives, I'm out of breath. I wish you peace.